Everybody, Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Blake Murphy. And a somber start to today's program is today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota, your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history, stay for the future. Dufferin North of Steeles has to be Hall of Famer, Leafs legend, Börje Salming, dying today at the age of 71. A couple of huge ovations earlier in the month in Toronto was part of the Hockey Hall of Fame's induction weekend. Nick Kyprios of Real Kipper and Born, kind enough to stick around for this first segment. You were there for some of that, Nick. Not unexpected when you're talking about somebody who has ALS, but yeah, it is kind of mind-boggling that we just saw him here in the city. And not that he looked like he was doing well, but it's just like it really is pretty shocking when we had this discussion about his life and career just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, Ben, a lot of people caught off guard on this one. And, you know, we had a pretty good idea with our alumni that he was looking at maybe 2 months, 3 months at the most. But here we are a little after, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And he's gone. So I think it just lets everybody know how aggressive ALS was with him. And I know another good friend of ours, Mark Curtin, has been battling the same situation here. And I don't know what the actual count is or what the actual term is, but Börje's rate of this disease was 4 times as fast as Mark Curtin's.
Wow.
So, you know, we had to say goodbye 2 weeks ago. That was our goodbye. And I know Börje looked at it and knew that, in many ways he got to be a part of his own funeral. Unfortunately, that's the way he looked at it. And that's the way he mentioned it to many of us, in the alumni. And of course he wrote everything down, right?
Yeah.
And he knew he was here to say goodbye.
How much did that weekend mean to him, having been around him and been around the other alumni?
I think it was total closure, to be honest with you. Outside of your family, you got a chance on a very big stage. Hockey Hall of Fame weekend, Toronto, Maple Leaf fans, 16 years in this city to come and say goodbye. And I think, you know, between, himself and his family, they couldn't have thought of any way better to unfortunately go through something so hideous like this. But this was really looking at the best of a horrible situation, and that is with class, with dignity, which he always carried himself with. And when you think what he had to endure the first time he came to Canada and the last time he came to Canada, it reeked of character on both ends. He bookend twice what he was all about.
I mean, that's what real toughness is, right? There's different ways we use the word toughness, but that's real life toughness in both of those instances. You mentioned the first time he comes over to Canada. How important do you think that moment was for hockey, like the global hockey community, to not just celebrate Börje 2 weeks ago, but that whole weekend kind of became a celebration of Swedish hockey and of the globalization of this game? And you look back and Börje's fingerprints are all over that. He was a trailblazer in that regard. How big is his legacy in terms of international hockey?
It just continues to grow, I think. And the longer he's gone, the stronger it will get. And I look back and I think, you know, what happens if he doesn't find a way to get through the Philadelphia Flyers, that he actually comes over and says, you guys are all animals and this is not hockey, and he goes home. What would that have done for the following 10, 15, 20 years? How far could the program of Europeans being a part of our National Hockey League have been behind if Boria would have been like most people and said, this is crazy. This is not hockey. This is not what I'm all about. I'm going back home. Mm-hmm. He never wavered. We had Stu Gavin on a Real Kipper and Bourne show today, and I urge everybody to download that if you get a chance, because he spent 5 years day-to-day with Boria, and to hear him talk about where he was mentally and physically and emotionally day-to-day, like he didn't take the crap of the Philadelphia Flyers and anyone else that called him chicken sweet. He actually fought back, and he probably isn't recognized as being physically as tough as, you know, people really know. Like, he dished it back out.
Yeah.
And he did not give an inch to anybody. Bobby Clark, Dave Schultz, all of those names who tried to run him out of any rink. Like, he does, people just still don't know how strong and tough he really was.
Nick, so you were the next generation of NHLers, right? It was pretty tough, I would say. You were part of the toughness in that next generation. But, yeah, you played with guys that played in that generation. There was a bit of a crossover, and obviously, how different a sport was that? Like, you hear accounts and the great feature.
Ben, I wouldn't even begin to discuss it with anybody born after like 1998. They'd look at me and go, you all should be in jail.
Yes.
Right? Like, forget about playing hockey.
Right.
Right. And you don't. It just, it's in its place. Yeah. And we all have memories of it. But we know the game has changed, and we know that fourth liners today aren't fourth liners like I was. They're just first and second liners in waiting, fourth liners today. But it was nuts back then. And that's the way it was.
Yeah. Like, not quite like putting your life on the line when you step on the ice, but like, what's like one stage removed from that? Like, literally. I mean, what, Boria
had baseball bat, not slashes, baseball bat swings, right? And I'd always have a chuckle with Bob McGill. Big Daddy, as we know him, and he'd be like, nobody's getting around me. They're going to get the baseball swing across an ankle or a knee before I let anybody get around me. And it was just the way it was. But I'm glad it's not anymore. And I'm glad that we're seeing the high skilled of a Connor McDavid and many more behind him. And it's fun to watch. And it is what it is. But as far as the character and the life lessons that anybody could get out of the way the Boria Solomon lived his life, will carry on in any generation. And there's different meanings for different people when it says don't give an inch. But Boria kind of wrote the book on that.
Kind of wrote the book as well on how to be, you know, you talk about his physical toughness and the skill he brought to the game, that real two-way impact guy. This is a guy who scored 19 goals at some points. He had a point-a-game season. He had 150 penalty minutes a different year. Do you find there's a bit of a, you know, as the game has gone to a more, as you said, skill through the depth positions, through your fourth line, through your third pair, that type of guy has become a little bit more rare?
Yeah, it's just a matter of whether or not you have the skill to pull it off, Murph, at the end of the day.
I do not.
Right? And the ability to get up and down the ice, and only special players can do that. I remember being a kid just watching Boria come over and not knowing anything about him, and then all of a sudden you're like watching a guy like sprawl to block a shot, and like I don't recall anybody ever really doing that. I think at times you'd see a guy like kind of bend over a little bit sometimes and kind of almost look like a goalie or put his shin pads together, but to sprawl and time a blocked shot, he was the first one I remembered. And I'd road hockey it, right? In the snow.
Yeah.
Where it's the two-legged slide, and you're like, Salming.
Yep. Well, I'm glad he got closure. I think for a lot of Leaf fans, they got closure too, right? Like that felt like it was special, obviously, for anybody that's ever watched this game.
Yeah, and, you know, we don't have the lineup of of these type of players like the Montreal Canadiens have. And, you know, outside of going back to 67 and beyond that, he was that next royalty kind of Toronto Maple Leaf. And that's what probably stings the most here is that he is near and dear to, you know, a lot of people that were around that generation in the 70s and the 80s.
Well, and a very significant Swedish contingent on this Toronto Maple Leafs team. In fact, an entirely Swedish pairing, defensive pairing. And if we're going to switch the conversation to yesterday's game, Rasmus Sandin now playing 22 minutes a game. I mean, the ask of those guys who, like it or not, ready for it or not, they're forced into top four roles, and now Jordy Benn's out at least a week, at least 7 days. Can this team withstand what they've had to go through? Their top three defensemen were already down, then they lost Jordy Benn yesterday.
Well, you just hope that it's not long for Benn, because, you know, say what you will about him, but when he's out there, he seems okay for the most part. You hope that Brody can come back in maybe another week and a half. But to answer your question, no, if this continues, it's not sustainable. And I remember having conversations with Justin Bourne and Sammy on our show going into the spring of last year. And I'm like, it takes 8 or 9 defense to win a Stanley Cup, not, you know, 4 or 5 or 6. And lo and behold, they're on the depth chart of 8 and 9. And it was okay last night, and they were able to kind of hold on a little bit. But here you are less than 48 hours later. You got a 2 p.m. start, and you got a soon-to-be 40-year-old in Mark Giordano, who played a heck of a game last night, but played 24 minutes. And I hope he's hydrated.
He says he loves it, though. He says he loves playing that.
And we all love it. I played this morning, you know, and I loved it. But Father Time catches up to everybody. And, you know, Chara at age 39, 40, 41, still got to play, but not at the level that you'd like. But for the most part, the intelligence of Mark Giordano, the ability to have your body in the right place at the right time, the stick positioning, still at a high level, and it showed last night.
On top of all those other things that you've had, and you mentioned, you know, they're surviving basically right now. They're sustaining it while they can. It does feel a little precarious. And one of the things I look at is they've gotten a 9-11 save percentage from their goalies and over 920 from Samsonov, who remains out and they're hoping to get back soon, and 926 from Matt Murray. You're heading into a back-to-back here, and Matt Murray has not been the sturdiest of goaltenders. Eric Sjogren's still in the mix as well. What does this team look like right now if they haven't gotten, I think we can fairly say, much better performance from their goaltending trio than we rightfully would have expected?
Well, when it comes to the concern so far, you got goaltending on a real low level here in terms of priorities. And they've been really good for the most part. And you got points out of Sjogren, who is your third string goalie. They've answered the bell, as far as I'm concerned. And Murph, you got to make sure that you're not overtaxing Matt Murray at this point. And where does Sjogren come in? They were talking about maybe Pittsburgh next week. But you still got to play them, right? And you still need points. And right now, I'd have no problem going back to Matt Murray and maybe riding this thing just a tad here. You know, he's not Giordano's age. He's still fairly young in the grand scheme of things. So as long as the groin feels okay, ride Matt Murray a little bit.
Yeah, and you're in triage mode right now. It's just you're trying to get through it. One of the trickle-downs of this, and I know you guys talked about it on Kipper and Bourne earlier. I got to listen to a chunk of it on my way in. With your defense thinned out, and this team has done a really good job limiting opportunities for opponents, one of the ways they've done that is having their forwards play a stronger defensive game. I know you have some concerns about potentially what this has meant for Mitch Marner's role and the way they've had to deploy him.
Yeah, and you know, there's always that conversation is how much do you want your star players killing penalties? And as far as I'm concerned, Mitch is as good as anybody out there right now in the league when it comes to killing penalties. It's to the point where now not only does a team have to worry about executing well on a power play, but they got to worry about not giving up any opportunities to Mitch Marner, because this guy, his best, you know, defense on killing penalties is being offensive minded, mm-hmm. and he is a threat every time he's out there. It's not just get it and throw it down the ice. If this guy has a chance to go, he goes. But with that comes a cost, and I managed to be able to kill penalties 1 year in the NHL, and it stops and starts, and it's taxing. It wears you down. And here we are in just in the third week of November, and there's some games that it gets a little tiring for Mitch. And I just for me, it's I'd rather see those penalty minutes or penalty kill minutes come down, and I'd like to see his even strength numbers go up. I asked Justin Bourne today on our show, where is he on even strength minutes? And I think he's like over 20 minutes behind Matthews. And that's your best, most dangerous guy 5-on-5. And I'm like, got to get him. I got to get those minutes up higher. And I pull back on the penalty killing as good as he is.
He's so good, though.
He's so good. But you worry about what's going to be left of him in March and April.
Right.
And there are times last year and the year before where you go, well, Mitch just doesn't look good in the playoffs. And it's like, no, well, no kidding.
Yeah.
24, 25 minutes a night, and a lot of them on the penalty kill. Those aren't, even on 5-on-5, 25 minutes, if it's just power play and even strength.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to talk, you want to add 2 or 3 minutes on the penalty kill on that on average. And now you're taking his work, levels right through the roof.
Yeah, I wonder how. Talk to me how that works, because it's November and we're talking about spring here, right? How, like, playing 25 minutes a night, he's not playing that, but playing over 20 minutes a night, playing over 5 minutes a game on special teams, how that could impact you months down the road. Like, yeah. Do you feel that, like, after a game? Like, how do you?
Listen, they're young. They're young. This is, they're never going to feel stronger now. They're not young kids. Well, they are young kids, but they're still now 6-7 years in their career. These are prime years. So they're going to feel at times like they can just carry the weight of the world on their shoulders. And that's okay. But you, as a general manager, a coach, a president, you gotta manage that. And 82 games, you hope for another, 21 games in the playoffs. And You gotta pull the reins in on some of these guys.
It just feels like the sport is not like that. Like, well, we talk about load management in the NBA, and this is I remember having this conversation when Patrick Marleau was going through his Ironman streak, and whether it would have been prudent for the Maple Leafs to sit him for a game or two, and they didn't, and he had history on the line, so it was a little bit different there. But like, are we at the point in the NHL now where you can say, hey, Mitch Marner, you're really good at killing penalties, but look at this matchup. You know, maybe we can win this game without you playing 20 minutes a night. And this is your game where you're actually getting a breather. Like, we haven't really seen that in the NHL.
I know it's talked about with the Leafs, and that, a lot of the push earlier in the year was that we have now better depth, right? And you're going to see Austin Reese out there a lot more late in games. And we have. But when you have also the fact that your general manager has no contract at the end of the year,
right,
and you're Sheldon Keefe and your can's kind of tied to his can,
yeah,
and things aren't going to start, Mike Tyson, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the nose.
They're second now in the division, so they've built some equity. It's
and
tough.
You're two losses away from being under 500 if you don't count those stupid overtime losses.
And you know what we're going to be talking about is, say that goaltending slides or this next, the Jordy Benn injury is the one that breaks the camel's back or whatever. This is a team that hasn't scored very effectively. You mentioned how dangerous Mitch Marner is in the offensive zone at 5-on-5. Only once in the last six games has he had more than one 5-on-5 shifts start in the offensive zone. This goes beyond just penalty killing. They have to use him, and part of this is the tweak in the top six, but they have to use him more in a defensive role, even at 5-on-5, Kipper.
So what you're saying is I'm on to something.
You're on to something. This is why you don't need the analytics. You don't need this website. You just can sense it.
Yes. Yeah, and the other factor is, too, as Morgan Riley has shown us, like, heaven forbid one of these guys goes down.
Yeah.
Right? So who's your second Mitch Marner on the penalty kill? Who have you developed? Who have you put in a position in November and December to say, yeah, you did it back then, now I need it now in April?
Before I let you go, that was a cool atmosphere, other than the stuff being thrown on the ice yesterday. But that was cool. The Devils fans sensed the moment that something historic was happening.
And it wasn't a monkey wrench, for God's sakes, being thrown at him.
Maybe like a half full.
Half a Coke.
Maybe. So this is what I wanted to get to with you, Nick. So you're speaking like a man that has an answer to this question that is not going to surprise me. But have you ever been on an ice surface and had things thrown in your general direction?
Yes, all the time.
All the time. Wow.
We were there to knock out the Quebec Nordiques in their final game in history. They were moving, and the fans were sour.
Rightly so, I would say.
And we're celebrating seconds after the buzzer goes with Mike Richter, and Brian Leetch looks at me and goes, "Did you throw up?" And I'm like, "No." And I look at my jersey, and I'm covered in mustard. And I got pelted, but I didn't know how bad I was. But there was hardly any blue in my Ranger jersey. That's how bad it was.
All right. So, yeah, hot dogs, not as bad as like a half full beer can. Don't advocate either one.
I've heard European basketball stories about like bottles of pee getting chucked at you. Like when I wrote that book with Carl English, like it's some of the war stories he had from playing overseas.
Yeah, no, Craig Forrest, we had in studio the other day. I mean, yeah, he speaks directly to that, playing on the road in Honduras.
That is nuts.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
Don't give anybody any ideas, Murph, right?
No. If no one heard that from me.
Yeah. Nick, thanks for this, man.
Hey, always a pleasure, guys.
Nick Caprios helping us break down today's top story, brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. When we get back, we'll talk about that Raptors loss to the Nets, and we'll also talk about the NFL game that's already in the books, one that's on the go right now. Plenty more next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. To go visit my four-year-old's kindergarten class this morning with my wife. That's a thing that you do, apparently. It's the first time I've ever done it. The previous, maybe it's a Burlington thing, because in Oakville, when my eldest child was in kindergarten, I always wondered what went on in there, but I never got a firsthand look. You get to observe as a parent of a kindergartner. So we sat in there for an hour, and obviously, like, you're observing the child in its natural habitat, except it's not. As soon as you're in there, right, there's nothing natural about it. But I will say, kindergarten's a lot different than like 34 35 years ago. It's a lot different. There's a lot more technology. It's much better. Every day, what do you remember about kindergarten? Anything?
Nothing.
I remember the announcements being a big thing, and
I remember playing foot hockey at recess, but that was probably, do you have recess in kindergarten, or is that later?
Yeah, you're allowed outside.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's,
what do you mean?
Well, I don't remember if like kindergarten was like you just go outside and there's a playtime part of the day. Like I don't know. Yeah. It was a long time ago.
Here's the thing about kindergarten. The whole thing is playtime.
It's just daycare, right?
Yeah, 100%. And that's, you don't need to, if my son's kindergarten teacher is listening, you don't have to put on airs. Like, I don't, honestly, it'd be nice if he learned something. Don't care if he does. He's four. Like, just take him. I don't have to pay for it. Take him at quarter to nine, and then we'll pick him up at a quarter after three.
I don't have kids, so I don't really know. I would imagine that what kindergarten teachers impart on kids, though, is like, extremely important. It's just not like, hey, we're going to open up our books. It's right. like, oh. how do you share? How do you yeah. act as part of a group? How sure. do you focus your attention? How do you be a nice little kid?
Yeah. He's got a ways to go on that. But anyways.
He's not a nice kid?
Sometimes. He's very much likes to play the victim. Like, he oftentimes comes home and says, I was bullied today. And I know for a fact he's not bullied. In fact, I saw it firsthand that someone was, you know, commenting on something that he had built with blocks. And he said, you're bullying me. I said, no, they're just commenting on what you've created here. It's that constructive criticism.
Yeah, your castle just sucked. Do you use your kids' names on air? Or is that a no-no? I don't know how this works.
You can. It's fine.
Okay, Your son's name is Wyatt.
Yes, my youngest
son. The wrestler who you could watch on Friday Night SmackDown on your Sportsnet channels or on Sportsnet Now later, Bray Wyatt, uh-huh. has an alter ego that's more evil than Bray Wyatt.
Oh. I'm not familiar with
this.
It's a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde situation.
You name your kid after the evil wrestler, and you have mentioned to me several times that your children are drawn to wrestling. He's going to see, this Wyatt is nice when the cameras are around, when dad's around, when mom's around, and then, the bad side comes out.
No, we see plenty of the bad side. But yeah, I will say on the name Wyatt, it was, at the time of his naming, I thought it was going to be less popular than it turned out to be. It's like a top three. Yeah. Like baby name.
Wow.
Yeah. It's intense. Anyways.
I don't interact with a lot of children. Yeah, so yes. I'm not a certain reporter out there posting videos of kids in the library today. If you know your Toronto weirdo politics tweeters.
I don't.
Anyway. No, I don't. Like, I have a nephew, and he has a cool name that I imagine is a more popular name now. Mm-hmm. Nolan.
Okay. Yeah, Nolan, I think, is very popular.
But
Blake is super popular. When I was growing up, I didn't know any Bens, though. Ben has really come around. Like, Ben is a super popular name as well. What do you think is more popular, Ben or Blake?
I have no idea. I have no... My entire frame of reference for this is that my name is Blake, your name is Ben, and I have one friend whose son is named Ben. Mm. So 2-1. Ben is as popular as Blake.
That's what I would have guessed. Happy Thanksgiving to our American friends and part of my family, which is American. Did you know that your team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, are the only team in the NFL to have never played on Thanksgiving?
The Jacksonville Jaguars are also, like, when they decided a few years back every team in the league has to get one primetime game, it's only fair, we got to spread it around. And then they were like, oh, by the way, the Jaguars, when you go to Europe every year, that counts as your primetime game. 9:30 a.m. is now primetime. The Jaguars probably have a lot of weird things like that.
You know, it's speaking of primetime games, you know, the New England Patriots are part of Thanksgiving tonight. They have a pretty intriguing matchup against a potential fraud in the Minnesota Vikings, who have a negative point differential despite being 8-2, 8-20 tonight. They play four straight primetime games. The New England Patriots with Mac Jones. This New England Patriots team, which has a great, great defense and I guess a great special teams that they were able to beat the New York Jets, but they go tonight on Thanksgiving, the night game against the Vikings. Thursday, like, the Bills don't even get the benefit of, like, the long week after playing on Thanksgiving, after digging themselves out of Snowmageddon in Buffalo and playing two straight games in Detroit. They are playing on Thursday night.
Well, at least New England's in the same situation.
Yes, yeah. So everybody, both teams get 1 week off, and then they have a Monday nighter against Arizona, which is horrible. And then hopefully this Sunday nighter gets flexed out of primetime, but it's the Raiders and Patriots. Anyways.
What are you trying to say?
Yeah, okay.
You didn't realize I'm wearing a Raiders hat today.
I didn't. I mean, it's not like you're a Raiders fan, though.
I'm not. It was a running bit on the Fan Morning Show last year, though, that JD and Ailish were trying to talk me out being a Jaguars fan, and they each made their case for which team I should cheer for. Ailish saying the Bills, JD picked the Raiders, and I mostly got this hat. Like,
I was gonna did he buy the hat for
I just got it to pop JD. Like, he didn't know I got it, and then, like, we went to a concert one time and I had a Raiders hat on. Just a little something for our pal.
All right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Listen, there's no debate about the Raiders being a cooler franchise just in as a whole, and a certainly cooler logo Their merchandise is way cooler than the Jacksonville
Also, like, everything I own is black. It's the only color I wear today excepted. Today I'm in a nice bright gray.
Yeah, beautiful.
The other part of that was, and I maybe dodged a bullet here, but, like, when they laid out their cases, the case I had kind of made of, like, okay, if I were going to change, this is what I'd be looking for, and this is what I value. The Chargers looked like a much better team to bandwagon last year than they do this year.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if you saw the rumors that Sean Payton is sitting out there waiting for somebody to get fired. Like, it's gone beyond a Barry Trotz situation where Barry Trotz is like, yeah, anyone, but like,
but Barry Trotz has put a date on it too, right? Barry Trotz is like, yeah, even if you fire your coach today, and Bruce, if your coach cleans out his office, I'm not coming in until January. He basically bought. You know, at the time, it looked like Bruce Boudreaux. We'll see where the league is in January. But yeah, he came out and he's like, yeah, I could return, but not until after the holidays.
Sean Payton has apparently, like, narrowed his sights to two franchises. It's the Chargers and Brandon Staley, and it's the Cardinals and Cliff Kingsbury. So
I know some Cardinals fans. Our pal Emily Savard, who's been producing some shows with us of late, I have another one of my best buddies is a Cardinals fan, and they appear ready for the coaching change.
Sure. It was weird. Cliff Kingsbury just got a massive extension in the offseason to coincide with the Kyler Murray extension. I mean, it's just money, I suppose, but it seems like odd timing. That franchise is a mess.
And this is the thing, is like, this is what I find very difficult about analyzing football, because the seasons are short and things change on a whim. Like, this Cardinals team is pretty bad and they were pretty good not long ago. And then you look and it's like, okay, well, the defense is really bad. That's not something you can hang on Kyler Murray's absence, but, like, how much can you hang on a team that's played Colt McCoy and Trace McSorley for big chunks of games?
No, not a lot.
Trace McSorley, real name.
No, I know.
How popular is the name Trace?
I would say probably not. I was going to say very, but, like, it's not uncommon, I would say.
Yeah, Clay Thompson's brother who plays in the major leagues.
That's right. That's right. And turned himself into a player. So one game already in the books on Thanksgiving in the NFL.
Wild one.
Yeah, it was an absolutely wild one. And thank goodness the Detroit Lions had made themselves relevant coming into this one. Winners of three straight headed into their matchup against the Buffalo Bills. Home date is the Bills kind of riding the ship before this, but really not looking like the team that was far and away, despite a loss to Miami early in the season on the road. Everybody's picked to win the Super Bowl. Looked like the best team in the NFL, was blowing all the analytical models away. They were a great defensive team, great offensive team. Josh Allen, just give him his MVP. He's got it sewn up. Turns out, no, not quite the case. And he did have a pick today, leader of that category in the NFL, and got outplayed, frankly, by Jared Goff, who's having a decent little season. But the Bills get the ball back after missing an extra point and then allowing the Lions to kick a field goal, get the ball back with 30 seconds left, and Josh Allen unleashes a bomb to Stephon Diggs. And they kick a field goal to win it. So they're 8-3. They're not at the top of the AFC anymore. I think everybody is pretty certain that the Chiefs are the team to beat in the entire conference, and still in their division. It's hard to knock what the Dolphins have done, and we'll see in the rematch back in Buffalo, but already beat the Bills once. I will say, though, that a lot of the conversation around the Bills right now is similar to what we had a season ago. This was not a dominant regular season team that we saw with Josh Allen last year. There were a lot of questions about whether he could reach the highest echelon of NFL quarterbacks, really basically the entire season. And then he absolutely destroys the Patriots. And then he puts the Bills in position, save for 13 seconds to go, to beat the Chiefs, and got undone by some horrible coaching. And by the way, they did squib it with like 4 seconds left in this game as well. I don't feel any differently about the Bills than I did going into the season.
Okay, so I have a couple things off of this one. I think one of the more interesting things is, and this has been interesting in Detroit's little resurgence, where, yeah, they're still the Lions, but had they pulled this one out, they're 5-6 in a bad division. The season wasn't over for them.
No.
they run the ball well, and Buffalo has gotten by, like, they're by DVOA, which is an analytic metric that tries to control for a bunch of factors. It has its flaws, but to give us an idea of defensive quality instead of just points allowed per game, the Bills came in at number three and number four against the rush, and they've done that against the rush despite having fewer players in the box than you might expect for a team that stuffs to run well. Detroit comes in averaging almost five pops a carry. Jamal Williams, you know, 18 for 66 isn't anything crazy, but allowed Detroit to kind of slow the game down in the parts that they needed to and lean on Williams like that. So I don't know that Buffalo comes out of this one super thrilled with how their high-end run defense stood up against the Detroit Lions.
Von Miller got injured in this game, was carted off the field, but apparently like walked out of the locker room looking fine, wasn't wearing a boot or anything. But yeah, that would have been a devastating loss.
So I'm of two minds about what the Bills' last couple weeks have looked like. On, if you were, let's play that aspirational fan out that you played yesterday with Canada Soccer.
Okay.
You're looking at this and you're saying, well, this team is learning how to handle adversity. They had to, you know, Josh Allen's injured. They had to be displaced from their home for a week. They're playing in all these tight games and they're still 8-3. Josh Allen's upright despite the UCL. It looks like he can still make plays with his feet and with his arm. And despite all those question marks, you are winning these games. The pessimists would look and say, yeah, but you barely beat the Browns and the Lions. Josh Allen's played all these games, so his elbow's probably not getting any better. And guess what? Yeah, you're 8-3, but it's a really good division, and four of your last six games are against division opponents. So you better hope that these games have got you right against Cleveland and Detroit, because it's not getting easier between now and the playoffs.
Yeah, it seems pretty clear at this point, despite having the tiebreaker against the Chiefs, that they're going to be on the road at some point in the AFC playoffs.
Weird stuff happens, like, you know, who knows? Tua goes down on Sunday. I don't want to see that. He's been an unbelievably cool story this season. But, like, things can change quickly in a division, right?
Yeah. I would just say that the number one thing that you care about, that you're worried about, is Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't looked all that Josh Allen-y the last couple of weeks.
Almost like he has a huge elbow injury.
Yes, and also like he kind of did in the middle of the season a year ago, until they, you know, that Bucs game last year that went to overtime that they lost, where like halftime they apparently righted their entire season at that point. Leading up to that point, and even afterwards, he didn't look like the dominant Josh Allen that we saw for the first 4 weeks of this season.
No, or the season prior when he came second in MVP voting. Like, his completion percentage was down over 6 percentage points last year. He threw 15 interceptions after throwing only 10 the year prior. You know, this year he's gotten the completion percentage up a tiny bit, but he's also at not a career high interception percentage, but since he was a rookie.
Yeah.
So there are more mistakes setting in now. Is that the elbow doesn't have him exactly where, you know, you throw a ball, you think it's going 35, it only goes 33 because your elbow's not 100%. That would only really apply the last couple weeks. I still maintain that, I mean, again, I'm not in there looking at his elbow, and it wouldn't do any good if I did. It's still stood out to me as a little strange that with Cleveland and Detroit ahead on the schedule and so many division games left, that he played in that game against Minnesota.
Yeah. I just am reminded of the Bill James thing that you mentioned, maybe it was last week, about how when you demonstrate a skill, that's a skill.
You own that skill.
You own it. And I know they lost against the Chiefs because they didn't understand that squib kick is an option. You just, it's the middle one when you play Madden. but no, remember before that, leading up to the 13 seconds left, Josh Allen led his team down the field in a 2-minute drill against one of the best teams of this generation to win a playoff game a week after having a perfect playoff game against the Patriots.
And that was part of the Josh Allen breakout story in 2019, was he had five game winning drives and four fourth quarter comebacks. Like, this is a guy who can get it done in big moments. And that's why, you know, yeah, the Bills defense is a big thing. And the fact that they've rediscovered the running game a little bit is nice, but everything's going to go the way Josh Allen goes. So that's again why I was a little surprised that they pushed it. But they're obviously confident that he can't make it worse and he can play at a pretty high level through it. 24 for 42 today, 253 yards, not his best statistical game. I had one other thing off of this game that I wanted to mention. You mentioned that Diggs catches that big pass.
Yeah.
They have no time left to go down the field, and Allen goes to Diggs, and they connect, and it's seamless, and he finishes the game with 8 receptions for 77 yards and 1 touchdown. We talk a lot about the best receivers in football. We talk about Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson. I'm not putting Diggs on that level necessarily, but this is his 5th consecutive 1,000-yard season. He has almost 4,000 yards as a Buffalo Bill in just 44 games. Only Justin Jefferson has more yards than that since Diggs joined the Bills. And maybe most notable, I think, with that, what stands out to me with Diggs and in how hard a game football is to stay upright and stay on the field. Since he made his debut week 4 of his rookie season, only 3 wide receivers have played more games.
Yeah.
Diggs is, you know, one of the last Ironmen.
Yeah.
As far as skill position guys go, Brandon Cooks, Tyler Lockett, Amari Cooper, those are the only guys who have played more games than him.
Wow.
Since he made his debut week 4 as a rookie. And again, Justin Jefferson, the only guy who's has more receiving yards since Diggs joined the Bills. He is a huge, huge part of this. He's awesome.
No question. And it seems like whatever issues were maybe concerning him that were hashed out with Sean McDermott a week ago in Detroit, at halftime of that Browns game, where like he hadn't been targeted up until like the final seconds of that half. It seems like they figured things out, and everything's all good with them.
It was also a weird one where, like, yeah, he only finished that game with 5 targets, but he was coming off a week where he had 16. It's not like it had been a multi-week trend of him not being targeted. I don't know. Some games it's a tight end game. I don't know, but he is like remarkably consistent season to season, week to week. It's pretty special to watch. You know, we were talking about earlier in the week with Peter King about the Mahomes Travis Kelce connection. This is a pretty special one they got in Buffalo too.
Yeah, no question. So he's available. No Raptors are ever available. They had 10 healthy bodies yesterday. Fred VanVleet, like, so he's caught everything but COVID. Like, it's another
But he's had that before too.
This time around.
Yeah, when the Raptors had no players last year. And when they had no players the year before that.
Yeah.
Because everyone on the team got COVID. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't talked to Fred to ask if it's the same thing and it just hasn't gone away, or if he got a different illness or whatever, but something is tearing its way through this team over the course of the last month.
Scott, but it's a different thing though, right? Like, because I'm not epidemiologist, but
they tell us non-COVID illness.
Not an epidemiologist, but if you caught something, could you, like, your antibodies for like a couple of weeks would keep you from catching the same thing, wouldn't they?
But also maybe he came back and he wasn't completely over it and playing 40 minutes while you're sweaty and I don't know. I know that in my history of being ill, working out goes only one of two ways, and it's you feel awful after and you regret it, or you feel amazing and you're like, oh, all I needed was to sweat once this week. No, I don't know specifically what's up there, but Scotty Barnes has been sick. He didn't miss time with it. Now he's missing time with a knee thing. Nick Nurse has been sick. Fred VanVleet, Gary Trent, Chris Boucher, Delano Banted, they've all dealt with this stuff. And then that's on top of a league-wide issue with, like, the injury report that I bring up every day, and not today because there are no games today, but like tomorrow, almost every team in the NBA plays. That injury report is going to be 4 or 5 pages long.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. And this is something that I talked with Sherman Hamilton about it when I was filming one of those pregames, when I was like, I can't work with Ben today. Let me do
That's
TV.
Right. Yeah. You're big time in me. Yep.
Yeah. And we were talking about the fact that post shutdown, the league went, okay, we're going to do the bubble, and then everything will be condensed a little bit in the playoffs, but we got to get this season done. And everyone understood that. And then the next season started late, but with like a really condensed offseason, and it ended late. So then the next season started off of a condensed offseason. I'm not saying that this is the case for, you know, this is not why Scotty Barnes has a knee strain right now. The Raptors are in the mid, like, that knee strain happened in a stretch of like 1 game in 6 days for the Raptors. What I am saying though is, league wide, maybe it wasn't the best idea to play 4 seasons in condensed fashion with shorter off seasons. Like, Milwaukee and Boston look way, way, way better than any other teams in the NBA right now. Both of those teams have had deep playoff runs in pretty much every one of these years that I'm talking about. Strike while the iron's hot. Like you, I would be so worried if I were one of those teams about just like the cumulative load that Giannis and Chris Middleton and, you know, Malcolm Brogdon and Jason Tatum, like that, that's just so much basketball.
And Chris Middleton's been big time injured already in some significant postseason series.
I don't want to be like, woe is the team that's deep in the playoffs every year. I think
it's not worth it.
You can trace a pretty easy line from injuries are like, it's tough. It's not tough. It's the condensed schedule. It's part of it. But like the last decade has been defined by load management and trying to limit travel and sleep science and all this stuff. And the injury lists just keep getting longer. Some of that is like, yeah, we're pushing these athletes to the absolute limits of their physical potential. And like, can a ACL really handle all this? Can your Achilles really handle it? Like, I don't know the answer to that, but so that's maybe a component of it, but we have much better science, nutrition, off season programs and things like that. And the injury lists just keep growing. The one thing that hasn't changed and has actually gone in the other direction is the schedule.
Well, yeah. You mean it's becoming easier because it's
no, well the travel and things like that are becoming easier. Yeah. What I'm saying is they've gone from playing 82 games over 177 days and then having, you know, a 100 day off season to 82 over 177. And then it's a 70 day off season. Mm-hmm. And also the playoffs last longer than they did before. I don't know. It's just, so, I think we're seeing a little bit of condensing those seasons had a bit of an impact.
Okay. So that would, I guess we'll find out if there's the same number of injuries next season. In the 2023-24 season, where we have a normal season with the normal schedule and a normal off season, if we continue to see this injury rate continue,
then it's something else.
Then it's I don't know. Everybody's messed up genetically, I guess. Before we take the break, maybe we don't have time to fit it in
here. No, we do.
All right.
Sorry, I was just upset that every night you turn on basketball, no one's playing.
I like when the good players play.
Yeah,
also,
me too.
Gary Trent Jr., now trying to fight for his spot.
I thought you said you like when the good players play.
That's rude. He did hit a three yesterday, just one though. But he also had three steals. So, I mean, we talked about this. We played the Nick Nurse clip. This is a guy who has a pending player option that we all assumed he was going to decline and become a free agent. And Nick Nurse was asked if he fits into the long-term plans of this Raptors team and said, yeah, maybe if he plays a little defense. I mean, did we see, I mean, the counting stats are there at least yesterday, but I mean, it was maybe, you know, the reason this question was brought up is because his counting stats were down leading into that. Deflections. Maybe that's not the best way to evaluate Gary Trent Jr.'s defense.
It's not. Steals and deflections aren't. They help guide us and look at certain things, but the Raptors play a hyper-aggressive system that allows Gary Trent to take big gambles, and normally they trust the defense behind that to make up for it if he gambles wrong. They are too thinned out to do that right now. Gary Trent has not been as sharp in his gambles, and I think the thinking was probably, well, we'll let him gamble because he's good at that, and that creates a lot of chaos and helps fuel the transition game and things like that, and in the long run he will get better defensively. This is a guy who we kind of thought would get better defensively. Like, he's had flashes defensively, and I'm not talking about averaging a lot of steals per game or a lot of deflections. Like, he's had moments or even stretches of play when he was in Portland where it looked like he was figuring it out. And I don't want to be overly negative about him because, yeah, everyone who's still playing is feeling the effects of not having the guy behind him to make up for it. Like, if you're used to gambling in this certain way because Precious Achiuwa has your back, and now it's like Thad Young's there or Christian Koloko or something, that's very different. But no, he hasn't develop the way that they'd hoped defensively, and you can get 19 points, you can get three assists and three steals and still not have a great game. He wasn't the biggest culprit last night, but no, I don't think one game with three steals is enough.